What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Are there fractures in the Republican Party due to ICE's murder of civilians? Are we barreling towards another government shutdown? We are going to holla at journalist and executive editor of The Nation, John Nichols. But first, I'm going to roll, as John is joining me, this tape from White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt. Let's do it.
Nobody in the White House, including President Trump, wants to see people getting hurt or killed in America's streets. This includes Renee Good, Alex Preddy, the brave men and women of federal law enforcement, and the many Americans who have been victimized at the hands of illegal alien criminals. Saturday's shooting remains under active investigation by Homeland Security Investigations and the FBI. The Customs and Border Protection is also conducting their own internal review. As President Trump said yesterday, the administration is reviewing everything with respect to the shooting, and we will let that investigation play out. But let's be clear about the circumstances which led to that moment on Saturday. This tragedy occurred as a result of a deliberate and hostile resistance by Democrat leaders in Minnesota. As the duly elected president, the president is fulfilling the will of the people by arresting and removing these threats from our country and cities from Los Angeles to New York and, yes, Minneapolis. Yet Democrat leaders in Minnesota with sanctuary city policies have actively defied federal immigration law and the will of the people. And as a result of that defiance, two Minnesotans have now tragically lost their lives on the streets of Tim Walz's state.
Alrighty, because that wasn't agitating enough. We're going to play one more tape, and that is of Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. Let's rock it.
They tell us, and this is their words, this is the single largest deployment of immigration officers in one place at one time in a state that is not even in the top of immigration. What justifies this disproportionate flood? Nothing legitimate, but the president has been clear. Retribution, he's been clear. We didn't vote for him, so he was really salty about that. And it's unjustified and illegal. And we are praying for the relief that the state of Minnesota needs from the court. We were doing immigration enforcement before Operation Metro Surge. It was happening. It was functioning. Nobody ever complained that we weren't doing immigration enforcement. This just unjustified escalation is an intrusion. But what are we asking for? I'd be happy to go back to status quo. And that what makes sense to me. And I'll just say on my own behalf that the Pam Bondi letter, it's kind of reveals what this is all about. This is not about fraud, and it's not even about immigration, and it's certainly not about law enforcement. It's about handing over documents of the state of Minnesota, private information, including voting information, to the federal government. That's what this is about. And that's why we're fighting it.
That is Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. And Trump did say he told white people he would be their retribution. We're going to get into a little bit about what he said a little later. There are two calls being made across this country. One is to abolish ICE, which you know is the call on this show. The other, right, is to reform ICE. We just go back to the nice immigration enforcement, the nice way we ripped families away from each other. This ain't the time for that. Anyway, we're talking to John Nichols now, executive editor of The Nation. Thank you for joining, John. John, Trump ran on an anti-immigrant agenda and promised to be tough on immigration, and I'm putting it nicely. He said horrible awful things about immigrants the entire time he ran, both times. Most of the Republicans in Congress voted for him and for a crackdown on immigration. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's important to understand where we're at as a country. We had an election in 2024 in which Trump focused intensely, cruelly, dishonestly on a host of immigration issues. Trump narrowly prevailed. It is important always to remember he did not win a majority of all the votes cast. And he also prevailed, I would argue, ultimately more on economic issues than on immigration. But immigration was a part of that debate. And he came out of that election with poll numbers that suggested that, you know, a substantial portion of Americans saw immigration as one of his stronger issues, as an issue on which, if they didn't entirely agree with him, they sympathized. Since coming into office, he has implemented his agenda more and more aggressively, culminating now in what we've seen in Minneapolis. And one of the first things to remember is, or understand, is the polling now shows that immigration is no longer a strong issue for Trump, that the American people have seen his approach to this matter and rejected it, that they are horrified in a great many cases by what has played out. And there was a poll, just to give you a sense of it, there was a poll up in Minnesota last week done by the campaign of Peggy Flanagan, a very progressive candidate for the U.S. Senate. And this is a poll that was looking at, you know, I mean, I'm not saying it's everybody. I'm not saying it's, you know, I don't want to overplay anything on it. But in the questions they asked, they said, you know, what do you think about abolishing ICE? 70% of the respondents said, yes, abolish ICE. Now, why this is important is that in a matter of months, a admonition, an argument, a message that had been widely attacked by the Republicans and even avoided by a great many Democrats has now become very mainstream, because the people have seen not the sloganeering of a campaign, but the reality of what happens when you turn the federal government into this kind of force, when you use it to go after immigrants and refugees, but also communities where immigrants and refugees live. And so we're at an inflection point. We are at a critical juncture. And I think a debate about immigration that was mostly defined by sloganeering has now become very, very real. And in Minnesota, and I would argue across this country, people are horrified by what they've seen.
I want to see that poll, and I think yes to a lot of it. I also think, however, that both elected officials and some of the masses that are out because they saw a white woman and a white man be murdered. That's not supposed to happen in America. I mean, even the NRA has joined the chatter at this point.
Yes, yes.
Never said anything, as I pointed out to my last guest, Philando Castile. Mm-hmm. You know, had a legal right to carry, told a cop and was murdered, and the NRA said nothing. Mm-hmm. And what I'm hearing, and that, you know, that tape from Keith Ellison that I just played, is not abolish, but can we go back to the nicer way of doing that? But I do think, John, that because actually of the abolitionist propaganda rhetoric demands of the end police violence movement that we've been in for the last 17 years, this idea of abolition is in a place in this country it's never been before, and there's an opportunity to push the conversation further in that direction.
You nailed it. Yeah, that's exactly right. We should never be so naive, and I know you never would be, to imagine that we've gotten to a place where we're really going to change things tomorrow or next month. There's a great battle, a great struggle ahead of us. But the reality is that people are beginning to understand that that ICE, as it has operated, as it exists, is something that is, you can't really reform it. I mean, how can you fix something that has been so damaging and so consistently poorly and horribly operated. The reality is that I think I'm amazed, frankly, by how many folks in the political classes are starting to say, to use that term, abolish ICE, to say, you know, we've got to address this at a much more fundamental and radical level. And remember, the word radical means to go to the root, right? To go to the heart of things and figure out, you know, how to get it right. And so I do think we're at a different point. And in such a point, the debate will produce many critical junctures, many inflection points, and a number of them will come for the Democratic Party. And that's an important thing to understand. The Democratic Party has did a lousy job, or has done a lousy job for a very long time, of pushing back against racist and xenophobic memes that the Republicans have produced, that Trump and others have produced. And you can't work of politics that way, right? If one side is, you know, out there just, you know, throwing everything it can into the discourse as loudly as it can, and the other side is weak and ineffectual in its response, and frankly doesn't even produce an effectively educational response, that tips the balance, that upends things. And now what's interesting is, I think a tremendous number of grassroots Americans, folks, multiracial, multiethnic, are coming to their elected representatives and saying, hold it. You know, I'm not satisfied where this discourse is. I want something much deeper, much stronger. And Kat, I can't tell you, I've been at rallies and events where you're seeing just a real cross-section of folks coming forward and saying there just has to be a different response to all of this. And by the way, that response certainly focuses on ICE and other agencies, DHS in general, an operation that was cobbled together and still has a terrible lack of clarity as regards how it is even supposed to operate. And then, you know, at a fundamental level, there is a great movement in this country to impeach and remove Kristi Noem. I know people will tell you, that, oh, that's hard because Republicans control Congress and things like that. But it is still an absolutely vital movement because it says people have to be held to account for lying to the American people about, you know, just these recent shootings, but about what's happened in the detention center in El Paso, what's happened in, you know, communities across this country, and what's been happening, as you well point out, for years.
I want to talk a little bit, since you brought up Ms. Noem and her gallon cowboy hat.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about the gaslighting from the Trump administration, the rush to call Mr. Good and Ms. Good and Mr. Pretty domestic terrorists. Mm-hmm. We know governments lie. John, you and I know that. We've talked about that a lot.
Uh-huh.
But have you ever seen anything like? Because I think what makes it so, I'm just like, I feel like I'm in a relationship with my ex-husband, right? That you're looking at a thing. I'm looking at the video. I'm watching the video, and then I'm hearing,
yeah,
what you're saying. Like the level of blatancy is. I mean, I guess it doesn't shock me when Trump does that stuff. But I guess I am. I'm shocked might not be the word, but my head's cocked to the left for those who know me what I'm saying. Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Just talk about, like, if I say it enough, they'll believe it's true. Is that the strategy here?
Well, that's always been a strategy of governments, right? And remember, it doesn't always fail. There's been instances throughout history where governments have lied and lied and lied and lied to the point where some substantial portion of the populace actually accepts what they're saying. In this case, I think that we are seeing an amazing kind of intersection of changing technology, changing public attitudes, and old propaganda strategies. And that's something that I think a lot of Republicans, a lot of conservatives understand the dynamics of the current moment. But I do think that the attempts by Noam and Stephen Miller and Trump himself to perpetuate an absolutely false narrative has kind of run up against reality. And it's not to say where we end up on all this, but I will tell you this. On Saturday, well, let me take it back to when Renee Good was slain in the streets of Minneapolis. And the mayor of Minneapolis said immediately after the Department of Homeland Security and Kristi Noem and others, you know, peddled their lies, that's BS. You know, he said it in real time. You know, you had the tape and then he said, I just saw what they're saying. That's BS. That's not true. And push back at an immediate level. That is a change because of the confidence with which, in that case, an elected local elected official pushed back. We saw it after Alex Pretty was shot, killed on Saturday. You saw folks who can get in front of those national cameras saying, this doesn't fit, this isn't right, this isn't real. And so we've got a much more effective counter to the lies today. And why we have that, this is important to understand, goes back to the George Floyd case. Why we have that is because people are out there videotaping what's happening in real time and putting those videotapes up. And this is just as the George Floyd prosecutions after his murder, just as those were powered by actual video, by actual evidence that you see with your own eyes, shifted dynamics there. I think you are seeing a case in Minneapolis where that's happening. And just in the last 24 hours, it appears that Trump himself is starting to, or at least, you know, his spokesperson is starting to recognize that they are being seen as just, you know, not just liars, but really cruel, vile liars in this regard. And the statements from Mr. Pretty's parents and his sister and his co-workers and the parents and families of patients that he's served at the Veterans Administration Hospital. I mean, all of this is, I think, you know, kind of coming back on the administration in a very profound way. And I think, well, this is about, we're talking about one, in this case, one shooting in one moment. I think it is calling into question the whole of their argument. There are many arguments. And it is, I think, altering the debate about immigration, about how ICE operates. And so we're in a big point. We won't settle it today, Kat, you and I talking about this, because we don't know where all of this is going to go. But what I can tell you is, I think that we're in a very different place than we've been in the past. And for activists, it's a place of opportunity.
I thoroughly agree. It's an opportunity. And I, you know, activists, we move in different lanes, right? The lane I move in is different than the lane you move in.
Sure.
Different than other folks. That said, I do think there is a lane for folks that traffic in the sphere of election, you know, electoral politics. Mm-hmm. I've been talking a lot about, like, there are cracks.
Yep.
Inside of the Republican front, right? That even from the America First, right? Folks mad that he's everywhere except for here. And now we've got this where folks are not happy with the way ICE has been behaving. And that is an opportunity for folks that are in those circles to do a little bit of pushing, yes?
Can I throw one thing into the mix here? Absolutely. Which is kind of amazing from yesterday. One of the leading candidates for governor of Minnesota on the Republican side suspended his campaign yesterday. He quit running for governor. And he said, I just can't, you know, look, I'm all for, he was tough on immigration. He was hardly even a moderate, but he said, I can't accept what's happening here. you know, and he specifically called out what ICE is doing, what's happening in Minneapolis. And this cat is a candidate who had the support of a lot of police union folks. He was a very conservative candidate. And he's saying, this is way beyond, you know, what I'm not going to run as a candidate of a party that's pushing this line. And I know that there's still going to be plenty of Republicans who are going to, you know, stick with Trump no matter what. But shouldn't that at least be a sign to all Democrats that if Republican candidates are quitting because they can't stomach being, you know, following this line on ICE and all these other things, the Democrats have a huge space in which to be much bolder, much stronger in talking about, you know, funding issues and all sorts of issues. And grassroots activists have a much, much stronger case to go to Democrats and Republicans and say, look, just look at this reality. You know, move, become what you should be, respect the Constitution of this country, respect the basic premises of this country, not at its worst, but at its best. I think there's space.
I agree. And I'm going to leave it on those beautiful words because I'm going to get in trouble if I go any further with you.
I understand.
Thank you so much for joining me this morning. I always love getting to talk to you.
I appreciate it so much, Kat. Take care.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.